Creative black women discussing the media portrayal of black women and their confrontation with racism and sexism. The tape is from the National Alliance of Black Feminists Black Women's Conference, which was held in Chicago, October 21st through 23rd. The National Alliance of Black Feminists is a new organization founded in Chicago just 2 years ago. The conference was the Alliance's first national event. Between Friday and Sunday, workshops were held and resolutions were passed in the areas of education, healthcare, childcare, economics, media portrayal, women in the arts, political and community awareness, black feminism, International Women's Year, and sexuality. Tonight's tape is from the Black Woman in the Arts workshop. The first panelist is Darlene Hayes, who is affiliated with The Phil Donahue Show. She'll discuss media portrayal. Following her will be Margaret Walker Alexander, describing the problems facing the black woman writer.
I'd like to compare two current series that are on the air. One is white and one is black. And to look at how subtly they give black negative black images. And you know, sometimes you sit there and you don't realize how it affects you. Mm-hmm. One episode is What's Happening, okay? It's a black series. And the other is One Day at a Time. It's a white series. Okay, in both instances, the central characters are divorced women raising two children alone. Okay? In one episode, they dealt with problems on the job. In the instance of the white woman, she was an administrative assistant in an office. Okay? And her problem was her boss was making sexual advances toward her, and she thought maybe she might have to quit. In the case of the black woman, she was a domestic in a home, and she had been fired because her boss thought she stole some rings.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? You can write anything you want to on television. So they had the opportunity, you know, to either give either woman either position. The white woman had never worked. They had established earlier in the series that she had never worked until she was divorced, but she was able to get a job as an administrative assistant. And you know, black women had been working, you know, as soon as they'd been able to work, and she was able to get a job. The only job she could get was as a domestic. The problem that they dealt with, sexual harassment. Black women are probably more sexually harassed than white women because they're the last one to be hired. And they're, right, first ones to be fired, less likely to be believed, therefore they won't report it. So television missed another opportunity to help black women deal with a real life problem. And they took us back. You know, there has been a real revolution in television as far as black women's images are concerned, but I think all they did was give us some makeup. Because they took us back to Amos and Andy and made us a domestic. Mm-hmm. And reflected on our character by saying, did she steal or didn't she steal? Okay. In another episode, they dealt with, in these two programs, they dealt with mothers having problems with their children. The white woman was very concerned because her teenage daughter wanted to marry an older man. The black woman was afraid that her teenage son, got a girl pregnant. Okay. So you go back to the white woman dealing with her daughter. And it's a question of judgment, a conflict between the mother and the daughter as to whether or not she should marry this older man. In the case of the black family, it's a question, you put two young black people in an immoral framework, you know, you're dealing with their sexuality where you didn't really have to in the other situation. In the one series, the mother is a size 8, and the other series, the mother is a size 40, about how many guys. So, you know, what you're saying, and when you're a size 40, you're saying, I don't care about my health, I don't care about nutrition, you know, I don't care about my appearance. So these are subtle ways, you know, that television reinforces negative images of black women. I was supposed to speak in the portrayal of black women in the media, but I just really want to go and, you know, look at some of the jobs that they've given black women in the media. Okay, what's happening with Mama, she's a maid. Shirley is a waitress. You go to Good Times, where Esther Rowe was a maid. She moved up to a sales clerk. You go to Louise Jefferson, who is, she doesn't do anything. But she has a maid. Yeah. She's a housewife with a maid. And you got Aunt Esther, who all we can figure out is she works for the Lord. You know that. So, you know, and I don't know if anyone in the room would really fit into the image that is being portrayed on television. And, you know, I want to talk about, I just jotted notes down the things I wanted to talk about. I wanted to talk about how black women who have been celebrities, household names to us, have not been able to be national celebrities because we don't have an outlet for them on television.
Right.
Take example, Wilma Rudolph. Everybody knows who Wilma Rudolph is. I think she should have been made a sports commentator. Okay. There was an Ali fight not too long ago, and there was a woman commentator, but it was Phyllis George, who was a former Miss America. She knows nothing about sports, you know. And I think that we have to start thinking ourselves, when we see these things, I think an alarm has to go off in our heads, like, you know, where is Wilma Rudolph? You know, if she can do it, why couldn't Wilma do it? You know, our black playwrights, Antezanke Shenge, I think I'm saying that right, who wrote for Colored Girls. You look at Erica Jong, who wrote Fear of Flying, which they're making a movie out of. She's on the Johnny Carson show. She's been on a lot of those shows. I think when we see these people on the shows, we should say, where are our black artists? Where are our black playwrights?
Let me stop one minute right there. There's one thing that I want to inject in here, and that is something that's very political and very much a matter of the economic system. It's complicated by race, but it's money. And money is not available to the black person. That what the only use the television has of the black is to exploit him and to make money from him. It is not to give him any money.
But, you know, like she said, it's an opportunity for us to educate our children when those things happen. You know, you might see Erica John, you say, I know somebody just as talented as Erica John. In news, there are a lot of black women on news. I think there are some black women that are anchoring weekend news programs. But if you watch, a lot of times they send the black women on human interest stories and not really hard news stories, you know. And when it's time to move to the networks, they're looking for women who've had experience in hard news.
But then take a woman like Jane Pauley, a young woman in her very early 20s with no real experience. Put her on a show like Today, give her a lot of money, and she's an inept person. But no black newswoman do you see holding that kind of job.
And it's been my experience. I've been in and around television for about 8 years, and the only thing that they really respond to his letters.
In terms of whether or not we write letters to television stations, I did a television show for 5 years and they told us we had 2 letters. It was an issue-oriented show and it was controversial.
I work for a program that is really geared to the white suburban housewife. There's no other way to explain it, so I'm in a very frustrating position because things that are important to me, I can't really get across on the air except every now and then. But I think it was about a year ago, we did a program, the whole audience was about 200 black women, and we had Dr. Frances Wellesley, Aunt Zaki Shange, and Marcianne Gillespie. And like I said, after the show was over, I got 2 letters. But every time I saw somebody on the street, you know, that knew I was connected to the show, they said, I really loved it. You got to do it again. But when I go back to tell him I want to do it again, he's going to say, well, how did people respond to it the last time? So I don't know how to conclude this except that I think it's important that we start thinking about the things that we see and what it really means to us and our children. And you know, we have to start writing for things that we appreciate or things that we don't like.
Talk to me like I wanna talk to you. Been to Georgia, California, and anywhere I could run. I took the hand of a preacher man, and we made love in the sun. I ran out of places and friendly faces because been to me. Please, lady, don't just walk away. 'Cause I have this need to tell you why I'm all alone today. I can see so much of me still living in your eyes. Won't you share a part of a weary heart that has lived a million lives? You see, I've been to Nice and the Isle of Greece while I sip champagne on a yacht. I moved like Harlow in Monte Carlo and showed them what I've got. I've been undressed by kings and I've seen some things that a woman ain't supposed to see. Sometimes I've been a-crying for unborn children that might have made me cry.
I'm Margaret Walker Alexander. Everybody seems to know about Jubilee, and nobody seems to know about For My People. But anyway, I'm the oldest right in the barn. I've been at it longer than anybody here. And I have to deal with the printed word, with poetry and prose fiction as a medium of expression. So some things I think should be discussed. One, the humanism, the humanistic tradition throughout all Afro-American art, whether it is in the art, the poetry, the writing, the dance, the theater, music, in any art that we produce, this is our standard. The second thing I'd like to talk about would be the obstacles that we face as Black women, the problems that we face in producing our artistic expressions, in selling them or in marketing them, in finding an audience to observe and at least to know what we are doing if they don't appreciate what we are doing. And the three obstacles are obviously racism, sexism, and an expression of our present-day society, whether you want to consider the anti-humanism of a quasi-neo-fascist or fascistic society. When we are struggling to develop our art, we may not be aware of the problems we face as Black women as much as the problems we face simply of being Black. My theme has always been what it is to be Black in America, and particularly what it is to be a Black woman in America. I don't know how aware you are of the very dehumanizing and sexist effects of the medium of television. In the society, we have consistently and historically been presented as beasts of burden, as pariahs, as sex objects, as menials, the lowest of the low. We have been exploited by men, both Black and white. How we are seen by white America is the way we are seen by the white racist world. And even the Black world, the Black child, the Black family, the Black male, has had a tendency, they each has had a tendency to put down that Black woman. To say that, you don't have respect for your men, and you don't have respect for this or the other, and you are too bourgeois, and you are too superficial, and you are too this. And it is this that I feel the Black woman who is writing strives to write about, because certainly Zora had a painful life, and she's an example of the kind of oppression the Black woman in the arts has had to undergo. In the 20s, she was never allowed to take that doctorate in anthropology at Columbia, mainly because she was Black and poor and female.
That's right.
A woman like Margaret Mead or Ruth Benedict or any of them could get a doctorate in anthropology, but Zora, despite the fact that she was one of the most brilliant of Papa Boaz's students, did not get that degree. Yet she is certainly one of the greatest of our Black American writers. But in any case, if we remember Black women as writers, don't assume that any Black woman writing in America has had an easy time. First of all, she's had a difficult time even being hood. And she's had an even more difficult time being appreciated. I want to say one little thing about the feminist movement. Because from the days of Harriet Tubman and Sojourner Truth, we've been in the women's movement. It started with the Black movement. But every time, and I guess this is why we have Black Feminist Alliance, every time the chips were down, the Black and white women parted on the issue of race. And the white women insist that sexism is first. And the Black women insist that racism is first. Because we have suffered the three forms of exploitation. We've suffered because we are Black first. Second, because we are women. Third, because we are poor. And these three facts remain. And the movement has been split, and it is my feeling that until the cleavage is healed, until the white sisters recognize that race is important to the Black women, we will not succeed in the women's movement.
Next is Mari Evans with her experiences as a Black woman writer.
I have to react, first of all, very strongly to the whole question. Artists always seem to be faced by first one cosmic question, then another. For a long time it was whether or not it was art for art's sake, and I think we did away with that. And now it seems to be whether or not it is racism or sexism first. As a Black woman who has fought my own personal battle and one who has worked until, you know, the point of exhaustion, I think, in the community, I have to say I have suffered more from race than I have from sexism. I have to make that categorical statement. I have to say that as a Black writer, when my work is rejected, it's rejected because of its racial content, its ethnicity, not because it's submitted by a woman. And I know that's at odds. I went to the panel that dealt with some of the dialectics about feminism before I came, because I wanted to make sure that we were using the same definitions. I know my own thinking about the feminist movement, which I think is a needful and very necessary movement. But I wanted to make sure that my definition and the definition used by those people who label themselves feminists were the same. And I did find that we are philosophically at odds for that one reason. I feel that race is the issue that we are going to have to confront and destroy. And behind that, I think that our rights as human beings, as women, will be more or less ensured. Now, I also agree with the sister who said that we fight on all fronts. And I couldn't agree more that it is not a solitary fight. But I went back upstairs to get this because I think it's especially apropos. In the state of the 10th of October this year, dear Ms. Evans, we regret to inform you we do not find your enclosed short story suitable for inclusion in Short Story International. I sent it. I can't deal with rejects too easily, and so I don't submit material very often. But I received a brochure, publicity material, suggesting that I subscribe to new magazine, Short Story International. And I thought a magazine devoted to short stories, you know, bi-monthly periodical, sounds good. And but I thought, before I subscribe, let me see how they feel about Black writers. And I was especially determined to do it because the enclosure showed that the editors had gone all the way to Thailand trying to trace the author of a particular story, And it listed story after story after story. There was not a single African-American short fiction writer there. There were only two continental African writers included. For that reason, which is purely political, I sent the piece. It says, as you note in your letter, our commitment is to the short story form. Now, I don't know what that means. In addition, our commitment is to the featuring of a widespread representation of stories written by talented authors from all walks of life in all lands. We are truly international in that we welcome stories from all corners of the world in order to give our readers some insight into the lifestyles of people. Thank you for your interest in short stories. So apparently, the reason I said that this story was especially rejected on the basis of its ethnicity, not the sex of the writer, is because it was a story that had to do with assassination. That Black Pearl had printed with a black man's face and a couple guns over his head. Mm-hmm. So there was nothing to suggest Pink Lady. And it had to be rejected on the basis purely of race. Now, I've written some children's things, and there is a book entitled J.D. that it contained four short stories for children. I suppose fourth grade through seventh, maybe. My editor sent me a letter from Houghton Mifflin. Houghton Mifflin had Xeroxed my story and wanted my permission to include it in an anthology, Short Stories for Children. Carolyn acts like she knows it. They said they had, they showed me on the Xerox copy those things in my story that they would like my permission to delete first. And J.D. is a story that I wrote especially for black young people to capture their environment and let them say, oh, she's writing a story about me. There is a line in the story where J.D. touches his afro and thinks that he won't get to go to the barbershop anymore and hear the grand stories that the men in the barbershop tell about when Africans were kings and all that, because now his mother can shape his afro. Mm-hmm. They did want to delete that. When I mentioned that his sister passed by him smelling like flowers, they wanted to delete that. They wanted to delete, in other words, almost everything in that story that made it black. And that, you see, when we is a deliberate thing to destroy our ethnicity. Had nothing to do with sex. I mean, I'm not trying to talk about me, but I'm trying to give you some examples of what happens to black women dealing with white publishers. My first manuscript sold very well since 1970. I think it sold easily 20,000 copies, maybe more by now, which is a kind of phenomenal thing for poetry. However, my next manuscript was quickly shoved back at me because my next manuscript was more overtly political. They could see it in a way that they could not see the politicality of I'm a Black Woman. I wanted to say those things. I also wanted to say that when we're talking about images, and I think something that one aspect of the panel had to do with negative and positive images, Brenda was saying, I want to respond to that by saying that I can't deplore more the negative images of black women that are on the media, that are in our literature and that kind of thing, but I'm afraid that they are going to be with us. We have had a plantation school mentality from white writers, and that is from those people who control the media and who need images to maintain our colonization. We've had that. Ever since they altered the first picture of Aesop to show him looking Nordic as a Nordic instead of as a black man, I think we can document it at least that far. And so I think that maybe when we say that this is a fight on all fronts, I think that one of our concerns has to be not only getting rid of negative images, not only black women substituting positive images for those negative things, but we've got to learn how to utilize the negative images as teaching instruments. And I hope you won't misunderstand me, but you've got to take the things that assault your young people's minds and deal with them within the context in which they're presented. My son's two children are allowed to watch television indiscriminately. And I thought, how shall I deal with this if their parents allow it? And of course, my answer is, to politicize the child to understand the negative images and to understand his conversation and understand why those negative images are necessary for the society to try to affect his mind with. And it has worked beautifully. So we're going to have them. I'm not condoning them. But I'm saying when you see them and when you find them, use them, turn them to positive end.